man from Statesville, North Carolina, called One Leg Rooster. There's an interesting story about this band. Back in the late 80s, when I was living in North Carolina, I was a sort of a mercenary musician. I played with whoever could pay me some money. And I won't bore you with certain names, but there was a gentleman who tended to put together shows. And I always admired this about this man, this independent spirit. What he would do is he would go out and put together a show and then find people to play the show. So he didn't have a band. He put together the band on the fly with whoever he could find to play with him at the time. This is how I met a gentleman named Mickey Floyd. I'm not really sure how many times Mickey and I played together back in the late 80s, but four or five times maybe. And every time I heard Mickey play, I was amazed. Man has an amazing talent. You know, he's an amazing guitar player. And you hear a lot of guys just shred, get up there and they play 1,000 notes and they think that more is more. And then you have someone like Mickey Floyd who shows that less can be more. Every note the man plays is tasty. And that means a lot, you know, because anybody can shred. But it takes a lot of control and a lot of talent and a lot of confidence to play only the notes that are needed and let those notes speak for you. That's my impression of Mickey Floyd. Now, the interesting thing was, from that time when I played with Mickey in the late 80s until recently, I hadn't talked to him. I hadn't been in contact with Mickey in any way, shape, or form. And through the magic of Facebook, I was on somebody else's page, and I saw Mickey Floyd. And I'm like, holy crap, that's Mickey Floyd. Anyway, I friended Mickey, and we sort of struck up a friendship. Rekindled the camaraderie you have with old musicians you've played with. And Mickey said, I have a band you should check out sometime. And so I did. I went and I checked out One Leg Rooster.
Hello.
Mickey Floyd.
That's me.
How's it going, brother?
It's going good, man. It's Wick.
Yeah, it's Wick.
How you doing, man?
Oh, hell, I'm hanging in there, man.
Here we are, too, man. We just got through watching Larry Carlin and Lee Ritenour square off on
that. Oh, yeah.
It was awesome, man. Kick it back. Wait on you to call.
Oh, yeah, man. It's been a long time.
It sure has. I'm going to click this other line.
All right.
Okay, there we go. Now we're almost on conference call.
Hello? Hey,
that's Warren. That's my bass player, Warren Lee. This is Wacosta Loveless, man.
What's up, man?
Hey, Warren. How's it going, bro?
Heard a lot about you.
Oh, Lord.
You're a player, too. You're in the family.
Yeah.
We both survived Carl, man, so we're this is an exclusive club.
Yeah, we got the scars, right?
I talked to Red Blanton and some of them boys that played some with him back in the day, and all of them had the same horror stories.
Yeah. Some people just have a way, man.
Yeah.
He is the guy for sure, man. So what you want to do, brother?
Well, man, I appreciate you playing our stuff.
Oh, man, everybody who has heard. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Good gracious, it just amazes me.
Yeah, you know.
So grateful.
It's so hard to dust down. There's tons of good music out there, man. You know what I'm talking about. And nobody ever gets to hear any of it, you know.
Oh, yeah, my big complaint is it seems like people only want to hear what they've heard before.
Sure. And that's not, to me, all music is music to be listened to.
Well, it sounds all boiled down to money, I guess, with, you know, how it goes.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, if something makes, you know, $40 million and they want to find another way to make another $40 million.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
I remember one of my favorite stories back from the early 90s when the big, the Seattle scene was really big.
Mm-hmm.
And, the word in the industry was that Chapel Hill, North Carolina was going to be the next big scene. And so, you know, all these guys started showing up looking for the next big band and then went to Chapel Hill. And they knocked around North Carolina, but the problem was they came to North Carolina, and the only bands they were signing were bands that sounded like they were from Seattle.
Right, yeah. Right.
That or the REM thing, you know. Everybody was kind of leaning that way a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fact, man. They just the marketed thing nowadays is so different from back when we first started, you know. You could go what called barnstorm and go from radio station, you know, and give interviews and play your music on air and stuff. You can't do that anywhere. Barely do it at the public radio stations now. But if you have an eclectic sort of music that's not really mainstream, then finding somewhere to get it played and somewhere to play it, man, that's the thing. Just venues, you know, for some other than Britney Spears and Def Leppard and some of the other groups, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Taylor Swift.
Well, you know, that's the one my big complaint about, you know, if you get in your car and you turn on the radio, and our joke is if you turn on the radio, it's only a few minutes before you're going to be, you know, you're going to hear Enter Sandman by Metallica.
Yeah.
It's like there's a very small selection of songs that's in constant rotation, you know, in what I call corporate radio.
Yeah, that's kind of what West back to your channel radio nowadays, but you know, see what we try to do, man. We got a little trio, man, and we just really enjoy playing together, you know. And me and Warren's been writing tunes together since '98, and did lots of writing and recording in the last 10-12 years, I guess.
So we got the new one
about ready to get it back. We're getting some of the cuts back from it now, and we got this dude from Nashville, Tennessee. And this guy is the staff guitar player at the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, yeah, you were mentioning that.
Yeah, I know you probably know the guy, Steve Sinkler. Now, he was pretty big around here in the 70s.
He's from Concord,
North Carolina,
yeah.
Where he's from. And he went up to work with Dolly Parton and John Conley on the countryside, you know. And man, he's been up there 34 years.
Wow.
Just dealing with it, you know. And
yeah.
He works all the time, and real laid-back guy, old country boy, you know, Carolina boy.
Just loves to play.
But anyway, he's playing on this CD I sent you today. He's playing on one of the instrumental cuts that's on that. And we're waiting on the track to come back from Nashville now on that. So, man, we're really stoked up about that. But this guy's a real great A picker and a good guy, you know. He asked if he'd play on. We said, shoot, yeah, man. So we got one right up there to him, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man, if the indication, you know, if the reaction that I've seen at rhinooneair.com is any indication, you know, everybody who hears One Legged Rooster loves you guys.
Thank you, man, we like
hearing that, man. Cause,
we
you know,
love hearing that.
You kind of feel like the ugly stepchild in town, you know.
Well, I know how it feels, man. I mean,
and
you know,
that's
if
what it's really about. It's about, you know, letting other people hear it. And it's so hard to get anything heard nowadays, like we've been saying. And it's just great that you have a alternative way of doing this.
Well, he's providing a venue, you know, like when we first started talking about this, a couple of months ago, I think.
Yeah.
When we started exchanging music and stuff, and then you told me about the idea about the Rhino on the Air thing, and me and Warren thought, like, man, that's great. Somebody's going to step out there and take a shot at them, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're getting a lot of groups, not just our group, but you know, we see them online, some of the groups that talk about being on your show, you know. That they're just like us, man, tickled as hell to have somebody play our music and somebody actually like it, too, you know. So we just did a show Saturday, a live show, and we hadn't played a live venue in about 10 days.
About 10 days, yeah.
And I've been out on the road.
I was a little rusty.
I was out on the road doing some sub gigs and come back, and man, it was almost like Nirvana. You know? Not the band,
yeah.
but just getting to play live. See, we want to come down there and play for y'all, man.
Yeah, we do.
Oh,
yeah,
man, we'd love to have you guys.
That's what we do best. That's why we do this.
Yeah, we want to come play for y'all, man. We're going to have to figure out how to get that to happen.
Oh, yeah, we got to get you guys down here. I mean, you know, there's a big blues scene down here, and there's a big rock scene. But what you guys do, I like the I like what you're going to call the new. Are you going to call the new album? What is it? Foothills.
Foothills Funk.
Foothills Funk.
There's a lot of tracks that you hadn't heard yet on. I think we throw some of the demos up there, about maybe four or five of the, it was just dry mixes that we did in the studio. We didn't put anything on everything. All the tracks were dry, and the one I sent today was come out of the mastering lab, and the sonics are so much better, and for just a three piece band, but you get got the right sonics and your players are good, and you can come up with some pretty decent sounding things,
Well,
have a lot of instrumentation.
Well, the sound is different. That's what I love so much about you guys. The thing is that you have your own sound, and that seems very rare nowadays.
Well, I think it's just because we've played so many different styles of music over the years and played on other studio sessions, and I think
you retain some of that, I guess, over the years. I think it just comes down to style, I think, more than anything else, is what kind of style you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Because we can play about any style, but we wanted something to kind of bridge the gap. It was fun to play. I think that was the bottom line. Not, is it going to sell, but is it going to be fun to play, and is it going to be believable?
Yeah.
So we kind of hit it from that angle. All of us have played different styles, but we seem to have a little bit different sound when we play together, just this rhythm section.
Yeah.
We play in studios for a lot of different groups around the area, that need a rhythm section for different tracks, and they just hire the whole rhythm section to go in there. And sometimes they'll go and do guitar parts for them and stuff. And usually it's a rhythm section, a three-piece rhythm section to put the tracks on. They use us for that quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun, but it's just a discipline thing,
Oh, yeah. I was mentioning your guys' style though, and that's what made me think of the name of the new CD, because it sort of sums up your style. Foothills Funk.
And the people we were playing for would say, you guys, because we'd go play in a place where they want more country, but we kind of funky it up,
Yeah.
And I think it has to do with a good backbeat and some chicken picking, just about funk anything up.
Oh, yeah.
Down here in the deep south. But it's kind of been our style to play more R&B funky, even on our really Caucasian stuff, And this kind of, it's the feel we're comfortable with. And I think that probably sums up how our, we get our sound. It's just this really good the teamwork for a small rhythm section, that really they listen, and they don't have to second guess each other for whatever kind of piece of music we're doing.
Unless I get distracted like Saturday.
Yeah, it was very distracting there. I never laughed so hard in my life. It was like a comedy hour for some reason. Everything was just funny. There's probably 80 people, man, that type of thing. But it was very intimate, and all man had a good sound in there. And,
it's all about the music.
Well, those are the best ones, man. When you got a good sound and the crowd's reacting to it.
Yeah.
Just have a good night.
We're a dancing crowd. We're not a bar band. I think that's why we're hesitant to go into a lot of these places, because you're trying to play a jazz piece and the guys holler "Proud Mary" at you.
Yeah.
It makes you feel special, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, they're really paying attention, right?
Yeah. What the hell was that? I never heard that before. I ain't Leonard Skinner.
We get a lot of that. Unless we're doing a festival or a concert venue, we seem to really do good under those circumstances.
A lot of people don't know how to take us until they know us.
As I said, they say, you don't really like it when you first meet, but once you get to know them, you really can't stand them.
Well, I've always said that, the originators of anything, anybody who does something first is normally going to meet resistance, because people don't know how to take it.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to take the flak, and
well, I don't know if we're doing anything first. It just, everything we do sounds like us.
That's just it, though. I mean, it sounds fresh. It doesn't sound like you guys sat around and had a meeting and thought, okay, we want to sound like this, we want to sound like that, or this is what's happening, and we got to go after that dollar or this dollar.
Yeah,
Yeah, well, it sounds real.
The thing with us, man, was one of us would bring a tune or a melody or something in the studio, and we rehearse in the studio, and we'd just bounce it around, and if we were lucky enough to have a whole song when we got in there, then we would just start, diddling with different arrangements and stuff and different feels for them, and usually within 3 hours, man, we already had the last take in the box, so it's been kind of been like that.
So it's almost like from
2 days on one, man, we'd have it in like 2 or 3 hours and ready to do the next tune, and we call it a lightning strike, because, man, I don't have an all time for us,
Oh, yeah.
So we've been lucky, been on kind of a writing jag, and like to be working a little bit more, but,
Mick stays on a writing jag.
That seems to me like that's how all the best stuff happens.
Workaholic.
Well, don't you think? I mean, that's how all the best stuff happens. It just sort of lightning strike.
Yeah, by accident for me. Yeah. It's because we're not learned, very experienced, but not very learned because we hadn't had any training. But you know what you like to hear, and if you're lucky enough to be able to play what you hear, then that helps a whole lot.
Yeah, it sort of works itself out.
Yeah, it sure does, man. And keeping this old man playing a little bit longer, I sports and drugs, man. You can't quit.
Yeah.
Too dumb to quit, too old to do anything else, man.
You said you're getting a lot of good response off of it. That's great, because if it'll make somebody, like I listen to other artists, and it inspires me to play. And I would hope that we would inspire somebody else to play. That's just to me, that's just the greatest thing in the world. I mean, you just can't thank people enough sometimes to show up for you and come see you do what you do.
Well, just want to find somebody to play for, I think, is whatever musician kind of, what their big need is to have somebody to play for. It's great to be able to play, but I guess you feel like you want to share it if you got something good or bad or whatever, but players have to play, man. I don't know what else I would do. That's all I've ever done.
It's in the blood, right?
You got that Guitar Jones going on too.
Well, if you fellas don't mind, I'm gonna cue up a song here.
Cool.
Anything in particular you want to play?
You pick.
Well, how about the one you sent me today, Mickey?
The new one, man. Go ahead on.
All right, this is All Men Lie by One Leg Rooster.
Flew out the window like a bird. took that goodbye you never heard. Well, don't be surprised, 'cause all men lie, all men
tell people my first band was a hard rock band, and my second band was a top 40 beach band.
Oh, right.
So I've done the shagging stuff.
I'll tell you what, that's where a good musician's gonna die. Bless their heart.
Well, you know, for me it worked a little differently, because I was all about, I grew up listening to hard rock and heavy metal, and and then I went and joined this band, and everybody I knew laughed at me because I was playing beach music. But I discovered stuff like The Temptations and Otis Redding and things that had never occurred to me before because it was outside of my circle.
Sure. And that's what your radio station's doing. It's, you know, it's opening things up for everybody. It's opening doors up for everybody.
I sure hope so, man, because I think the outlets for good music now are so limited.
I'm telling you, man, if it wasn't for public radio right now and most of the internet stations that can get out there, you know, nobody would be hearing anything except, you know, top 40 and all the different genres of music, the first 10 songs. And I know there's a top 100. I'd like to hear what the other 90 sound like sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's just everything's so predictable, and I like that's what's good about the indie frontline. Unpredictable what kind of music you're going to play next. I like that aspect of music.
Well, it sure is unpredictable. I never know what I'm doing from one week to the next.
Well, I say I like that. That kind of describes us in a nutshell. Unpredictable.
Well, yeah, I've always figured all the best stuff is made up on the fly, right?
Yep.
Oh, well, it always worked for me. What saved my sorry hind in a couple of times? Just luck into something, you know, and get the job. I did that on a theater job, man. They had cheap music out the yin yang, and I don't read a lick of it, and I was sweating bullets. But I somehow faked my way in and got the job. it was a great fun. A lot of work was a great fun, and I've never done it before.
Well, I know the feeling. I remember I played with this one band. They asked me to come sit in, and I went walking up on stage, and the guitar player handed me a chart.
Uh-oh.
I was like, dude, you might as well put this back in your suitcase. He said, well, how are you going to play if you don't know the song? I said, look, I'll know the song by the second bar, trust me.
Yeah.
Man, that's what kept me working all these years. That and really good recall. But, you know, it all works out. You know, you have to play stuff you don't like, and sometimes it's a good thing because you learn to play it. You see somebody else's take on something, you know, you understand.
Well, to be a working musician, you have to wear a lot of hats.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, even the stuff that you don't necessarily like or is outside of your comfort zone, you can learn something from it.
Sure. Oh, sure. Yeah.
That's what I learned about these things. I learned I didn't want to play it anymore. And my brother, he has a good beach band, and there's some great ones out there, but it's just not my thing, you know. Yeah. And, more power to them. If they get there and make a living doing it, man, more power to them, you know.
Well, you know, it's there's a lot of things you can do to make money, but I've always looked at it like, you know, there's a balance because most of the people I know who are making a lot of money making music aren't really happy with what they're doing.
Exactly.
Man, that freaks me out, you know.
I've heard that.
I've never experienced that.
Yeah, I would rather be happy and poor than, you know, an unhappy millionaire. Sure. Although, you know, I would like to try out the unhappy millionaire thing once.
Yeah, just give it a fair shot, you know. These people that say, well, you know, I don't want to make any money. I just want to make the art. Well, stay home.
Stay
yeah.
home.
And let us make some money using the art, you know, because we worked hard for the art and would like to get paid for it sometimes.
You know, that makes me think of something that my stepdaughter says sometimes. She's always talking about how we get in these fights all the time about downloading music. Because, you know, she sees nothing wrong with downloading music for free, just taking it.
Uh-huh.
And of course, I think that's wrong because, for one thing, you're hurting the musicians that you claim to like so much. So, you know, I've always wondered. She, you know, her favorite thing is saying that whether there's money involved or not, people who want to make art will continue to make art. And I was like, you know, you're probably right about that because the need is going to still be there to make music. But if these people can make a living doing it, if you take away the possibility of them making a living doing it, they may still be making music, but you're not going to hear it.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. Yeah.
It's not going to be there to download for free if they can't afford to make it.
Yeah.
Well, you know, an artist that makes a living is somebody who loves his work and is going to work hard to make his work good. And if he makes a living at it, then he wants to make a good living at it. And I don't see it. How that harms the art.
Yeah.
Somebody has to, the artist has to eat and have a place to sleep.
Sure.
Yeah.
In any job, you want to go to the top as high as you can go.
I don't think Picasso was a part-time artist who worked at Burger King.
Well, I think a lot of, especially the young people, think that if you're a musician, you know, you're a millionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They don't realize that most of these bands, they go to these clubs to see, I mean, even the up-and-coming bands who are, you may hear them on the radio, but they go to a local, you know, your local bar and play for 300 or 400 people, or they go to a larger place and play for 1,000, 2,000 people. They're making a living, but they're not millionaires.
They're putting with ashes and seats, I think, is the terminology they use nowadays. If you can do that, then you can play most anywhere. But most places want you to have a ready crowd on speed dial.
Oh, yeah.
Before they let you come in there. That's right. I'll just call 400 people. I just come up and see it.
Have you guys run into that a lot?
We have a few places, and we're pretty upfront about it. And like, well, you know, we've never played here before. What kind of crowd do you think we're going to draw?
Yeah.
Nobody's ever heard of us.
Well, the reason I ask is that's really prevalent here in St. Petersburg in the Tampa Bay area.
Uh-huh.
Anybody can play anywhere, but they expect you to show up with a crowd.
And, yeah, and bring your own crowd.
Yeah.
I wish I could.
That way you can. I'm talking about all my fans to come see us.
Yeah.
I wish I could drink your liquor and eat all your food and pay you money so I can get paid. And it's all the economics. You know, it's especially in a local scene where you have locals that work with places regular, you know, and you have regular people that come in. And, you know, that's good for the local economy. If you got a good core of players to make a decent living in these places without having to go elsewhere to get to work.
You know, do you think maybe that's hurting music in the long run? I mean, because it used to be that's how you build a crowd. That's how you build a following. You went out and played.
And then hope somebody walked in and heard you.
Yeah, you know, one person might come this week, you know, next week maybe three people, next week 10 people. And it builds. But now, you can't get in there, how do you build a crowd?
But and a lot of that is the locals, and I don't have anything against this, they don't want the outsiders to come in taking their work, too, you know.
Yeah.
So it makes it a little bit harder for the out-of-town group to come in and find regular work, because the locals, you know, they need to work, too. They live there, you know.
Yeah.
It's Nashville's the same way, you know. There's a lot of work up there if you're up there. If you come up there looking for work and you're not in the circle up there, good luck finding anything but street corner work.
Oh yeah.
So you know it's real cliquish, I guess, from area to area. And I guess it's no different even in a small area like this, because the locals don't like us to play in their venues.
Let me you know, not to change the subject, but I'm gonna change the subject.
Mm-hmm.
You said that you recorded your record at Gaston Community College.
Yes, we did. Yeah.
Is that Running from the Colonel?
Yeah, that's the one we did at Gaston College. Yeah, that was pretty fun.
How did that come about?
Well, we listened to their radio station. They have a public radio station, and they have a show I like called Jazz Spot with Jerry L. And they spin a lot of jazz music I like to hear. But one of their advertisements was that they had started a broadcast production department there at the college, and they had installed state-of-the-art digital recording facilities and equipment. And they wanted professional musicians to come in and record so they could train their students, and they'd have an engineer there, and do tracks. And so I just stopped by the college. I was going you know how you go to Gastonia on 321 there?
Oh, yeah.
And I was going down 321. You go right by the college. So I just pulled in, went there, and asked somebody about it. The program director, a guy named Robert Mayer, I left him a couple of CDs that I recorded with me and Warren recorded with other bands. And he called me up, and we went in there, and we didn't really have anything prepared. We just started, experimenting with instrumental stuff, you know, and so we went there. I think we did about five instrumentals.
Five instrumentals.
This guy says, "Can you sing anything?"
Well, that's not what I was on my mind at the time.
So Warren come up with the Mill Hill song, and I come up with the Liquor Store song, and we took that Shaky Ground song and just un-Motown it as humanly possible. Did it in cut time and blazing fast, just to do something a little different, you know. And that's what it ended up being, that CD.
What I really love, I love all the songs on here, but Shaky Ground, to me, when I first saw it, I thought, because, I think we've all played that song so much, and I thought, well, this could go either way.
Uh-huh.
But when I played it, I was like, oh, man, I really love the groove you guys put down on that one.
Funk purists hate it, but country people love it, even bluegrass people love it.
Oh, that's what I like about it. It's different. I mean, it's like everybody who does it tries to do it the same way.
Yeah. But see, we call it hillbilly jazz, which is what it is. It's like electric bluegrass.
So electric bluegrass.
Playfully call it hillbilly jazz. I'm sure somebody's used that before. But it's kind of what it is, because, you know, a lot of fast picking and almost like jump jazz, except for the one backbeat. It could be jump jazz. But that's a two-step thing, you know, do that breakneck speed and do train songs, everything else. You know, just something. It was fun, so, you know, we threw it in there for grins.
Well, if you fellas don't mind, I'd like to play it real quick.
All right, go ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Shaky Ground by One Leg Rooster.
Well, I'm standing on shaky ground. Ever
numbers that you put down. My car got repossessed this morning. Hardest times I haven't seen in years. Girl, you better throw me a life preserver. I'm about to drown in my own tears. And I'm standing on shaky ground. Ever since you put me down. Well, I'm standing on shaky ground. Ever since you put me down. I'm standing on shaky ground. Ever since you put me down. Well, I'm standing on shaky ground. Ever since you put me down. Well, I'm standing on shaky ground. Well, I'm standing.
Now, see, that was quick.
Yeah, that's where we learned about licensing fees. Oh, then we get a letter from what's that guy? Harry Fox.
Yeah, Harry Fox. Hey, we'll give you a letter.
And they make sure that you're legal before they let a CD company manufacture that CD. You have to meet all legal requirements. We should have known anyway because we have a publishing company called Papa's Wish Music. We publish all our own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's been real. But, you know, that song and the Beatles song on there cost us $44 per song to for the licensing right to record it and replicate it, X amount of copies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was good enough because we've had a few people cover some of our songs and we've already gotten a phone call in, you know.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
they can do it. It's legal. We can do it.
Well, let me talk a little bit about some of the other songs, just find out like a little bit of the backstory. What about Mill Hill? What's the story behind Mill Hill?
Mill Hill. Took so long. We started writing this song. I've had some lyrics, and I throw a little lyrics in, and it was just an ongoing thing, and Mickey was experimenting with different rhythms and all this stuff, and one day we sat down and said, let's finish this song. And we did, and that's what we came up with.
That was a miracle right there.
Yeah.
It was a miracle you finished it.
I grew up on a mill hill, and it was a lot of people that worked, the family worked in textiles, especially around Carolina, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Mills and textile mills, and it could relate to that lyric. It was close to home, because Warren grew up in Mooresville on a mill hill, so it made it more believable.
Right on the dead end street.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I was thinking, you know,
I love the lyrics on it. That's why I wanted to record it.
Well, I was wondering if it had a connection, because I know when you grow up in North Carolina, you know, times have changed, because, you know, a lot of the mills are going away, but, you know, I remember growing up, you know, most towns had at least one big mill.
Oh, yeah.
And around those mills, there were always houses that were called mill houses. Where that had been built usually by the mill for employees to live in, and the employees would actually rent the houses from the mill.
My grandfather actually built houses for the mill.
Really?
Uh-huh. And then our family got into it as it went on up.
Let's see.
Grandmother worked in the mill for 43 years. Mickey's, all his family's worked in the mill.
That's my daddy, and he said, I ain't working.
He ain't working.
And I didn't either. I'm too lazy. I'm just getting tired.
I've worked in the mill, and Earl is painting the mill.
Just a hair better than poor white trash. Place to sleep, no. Don't matter what old times sold. Always had a place to go down on the mill hill.
7 the shift I'm on. Might as well live here, ain't never home. Down on the mill hill, yeah. That old mill hill, yeah. Windows wide open, 200 degrees. Old mill humming won't let me sleep. I can hear the boss man calling my name. Working my life away frame by frame. Down on the mill hill. That old mill hill, yeah. Up the street through a neighbor's backyard. Marbles, dice, or a game of cards. A little bit of this and a whole lot.
Adapt and overcome.
Something live, you know, you got to improvise.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The headphone thing, you know.
Well, I used to play with this guy one time, and I'm not, you know, of course I'm not going to mention any names, but if you know, we'd been in the middle of a song, and he would screw up and wind up in the wrong part of the song, or do his leads wrong or something, and he would just quit and look at it as like, what am I supposed to do? And I'm like, you're supposed to keep playing is what you're supposed to do.
I think I know that guy.
Yeah.
Well,
man, we're missing you down here in Carolina, man. When are you coming to see us?
Oh, man, I haven't been up there in ages. I'm hoping to get back.
Ain't nothing changed, man. You know, the women are getting a lot prettier than they were back in back in our day. But a lot younger, too.
Well, I tell you, man,
we live in race car haven.
Yeah. There's a lot to recommend Florida, but I miss Carolina, man. But we talk all the time about every time every time autumn comes around and we know the leaves are changing, it just like pulls it to heart, you know.
Oh yeah.
Because I don't care how long I'm in Florida or if I wind up in California or New York, wherever, I'm always gonna be a Carolina boy.
Well, that's kind of the way we are, man. You know, I think it's a little more laid back down here and. Being all that close to Tampa Bay, where they have baseball and football and hockey and all that stuff down there, major sports venues, it kind of takes a little bit of the urbanness out of the area somewhat.
Oh yeah.
But back here, man, you know, we still have traffic lights.
Well, you know, we're talking about your style, and I was thinking about the songs off of Running from the Colonel, and the one song that really to me. Sounds so much like the Mickey Floyd I remember. It's Cripple Chicken.
Oh, Lord. That's the hardest thing for us to play live that we got on that whole thing.
Really?
We weren't going to record it. We were warming up in the studio down in Gaston College. We were just waiting for them to get everything set. And we were just fiddling around with that. And what we did was... we come up with just on the spot, just this little arrangement for it, and for a sound check.
Yeah, I didn't know it was being recorded.
And they kept it. And I went back and did some rhythm guitar on it, and very self indulgent, just trying to make a little guitar piece out of it. But it was an accident. But it was fun, you know, and it probably got more spins on it than anything we've got on the.
Yeah.
On our side, I guess maybe it's called "You've Got a One Leg Rooster" in the song about a crippled chicken. You know,
everybody's
handicapped poultry.
Handicapped poultry.
Yeah. I've always played with a pick and two fingers, and I never could play with a thumb because I can't play with a thumb pick. And I grew up listening to people like you know, like Jim Birch and Jim Brown and Buddy Hawks, people like that. And, I hear them play, especially Jim Birch, man. He's like my guru guy. He's the only guy I ever seen play three songs at the same time. So, you know, what can you say about that?
Oh, yeah. So is he the guy that sort of showed you the way?
He's the guy that I feel like was responsible for stepping me up to be not just a regular guitar player, but to try to be a little innovative and go with my instinct and to step my skill level up. He was the guy. And I still go. Every time I want to get my feelings hurt, I'll go pull a guitar out from him. He'll take me to school right quick.
Yeah.
I took one in there to witness that one time.
Yeah.
Yeah, my old time is out of it.
How about you, Warren? Do you have anybody that sort of, like, is your hero? Somebody that kind of gave you direction? Or somebody you two looked at and kind of made you wanted to...
He's a local bass player, and he's not well known. Tough Blanton. He's just the most solid, most in the pocket, and never miss. I don't think I've ever heard it. Have you ever heard him miss?
No, he got crippled up in a car wreck, and they could play more. He only had one finger on his right hand. He could use it at the time. Played on a whole album.
Oh, man.
He was that guy.
Yeah.
He's probably about 80% now because he almost got killed in the wreck and crippled him up, but he's still a monster bass player.
he would show me just over the years little things, little hints of advice, and he's just pushed me to another level.
And you say
if you're playing with Mickey Floyd, you're going to go to the next level.
Hell yeah.
Playing.
Well, I don't want to be cruel. But you say Tough Blanton, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you fellas don't mind, I'm going to dedicate Cripple Chicken to Tough Blanton.
All right.
There we go.
He'd like that, man.
He'd like that.
Fix
Fellas, I hate to do it, but I'm looking at the clock, and we've been going on for a while.
I'm sure we have. I tell you what, I really enjoyed it, though, man.
I have enjoyed it, too. I mean, I've
flies when you're having fun.
Yeah. You know, I've always said the best interviews are just conversation, and I, you know, I feel like we could go on for hours here.
Probably could.
We got to get down there.
We're starting out. Bring one leg rooster to Florida camp. Yeah.
Man, I'd love to have you guys in. I'd love to have you in the studio and get you to meet everybody. And
that'd be a real trip.
You know, hopefully we can get you out and, you know, some of the local areas. There's a great club right across the creek called Six. Right across the creek, right across the street.
That'd be great.
Yeah, called 662.
Now we get. Play and play.
But yeah, that'd be great, man. We're gonna pull every string we can to see if we can get in that area and do just that, man. We'd love to drop by there and hang out with you guys.
Oh, hey, man, we'd be looking for you, and the door would be open.
That sounds like a plan to me, man.
Well, it's good talking to you and good meeting you.
It's good meeting you, man. I sure appreciate you fellas doing this, taking some time out of your day.
Oh, man, it's our pleasure, man, and feel free to call anytime.
Hey, man, don't tell me that. And anytime I lose a guest or something, I call you up and say, hey, man, can you do the show?
We're professionals, man. We do anything.
Yeah.
Well, you guys got a new album you're working on, so we'll have to have you on and talk about that.
Man, that'd be great, man. That'd be great. We'd love to tell you about it.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Andy Frontline. My name's LaCosta Loveless. I've been talking to Mickey Floyd and Warren. Warren, I don't believe I caught your last name.
Leaser.
These fellas are two-thirds of a band that, if you've been listening to Rhino on Air, you have heard. Ladies and gentlemen, these fellas are known as One Leg Rooster. If you're not familiar with them, you are now. And I hope you'll continue to check them out, and I hope you'll buy the records, support this band. This is one of the bands that need to be supported. Fellas, I sure appreciate it, and we'll catch you next time.
All right, man. Have a good evening there, and tell everybody hello down there at Rhino for us.
I sure will, fellas. We appreciate it.